Station number 16718, Major Wilfred White, Reel 10.
Mr. White, Reel 10. Who were facing you in your Alamein position? Were the Germans or Italians?
They were the Italian Folgore Division. They were parachutists, sort of grounded parachutists, if you know what I mean. And the main thing about them was they were incredibly tough fighters. All the stories you hear about the Italians running away and, you know, this sort of thing didn't apply to the Folgore. They were quite ruthless. And there is evidence, I believe, that they really, you know, went over the top when it came to dealing with any prisoners they took. So we respected that stroke, hated them very much indeed, and showed them a lot of respect. And when we were, after receiving our general briefing about Alamein, about the battle, which was largely, first of all, what the army was going to do, and what the support was, and the thousands of guns that were going to batter, and aircraft was going to do this and that. We had extra tank divisions which we hadn't had before. It was that sort of leading up to the final detail of the battle, which, strangely enough, came from our company. Strangely, in the sense that there's such the battle encompassed such a large panorama that the OC company was briefing us, and it when the battle started, it was going to start on the night of October the 23rd. I don't know if it was anybody else's company in our battalion, but our company in the 9th Battalion were given the job of neutralizing this strong point I told you about earlier, where the Folgore were positioned. And it is a most peculiar sort of business altogether. Although I've read a little bit around the subject of Alamein over the years, I've never heard or read of the battle that we were going to carry out, which was on the evening of the 23rd. Our company was going to leave its positions, go down to a starting point, a tape position, and the 7th Armored Division were going to launch an attack which would take them behind this hillock thing, strong point, and immediately they got behind the hill. The code word, I think it was chicken, would be given, and we on the start line would charge up the hill through mines and wire and all. And either because he loved me or hated me, my platoon was going to lead the charge. So the night came, we said, Goose, Chicken was assigned for attack, Goose was assigned that, hold it, it's not tonight. So we walked out onto the tape and lay down, and my orders was to get up the hill as fast as I could when I got the command, and if I couldn't get through the wire because it hadn't been... we had the usual artillery fire, you see. If it hadn't destroyed the wire, I had to fling myself on the top of it, supporting and the rest of the men, and the supporting platoons coming up the hill behind me would run out on top of us and get in at the enemy. And I thought, well, you know, that's a nice how do you do. And the 7th Armored Division, you know, the Desert Rats, they had a reputation, and there was no question of them not achieving their objective. So I see it. So we walked down to the start line, and got the okay signal goose, good chicken, I think it was. Chicken, that meant it was on at the start time, which was early in the morning. And we lay down. And strange enough, looking back, I had no sense of this is a foolhardy affair, you know. It's just that, I don't know what I was thinking about, to be serious. But anyway, we lined up, and then within minutes of the start, we got the goose code, when we operation off. So we toddled back. That was the night of the October the 23rd, and it happened, we were going to do it on the night of the October the 24th, so down we go again. We'd had a bit more time to think about it, you know, and we thought, well, I hope it's going to be worthwhile. And then again, a few minutes before, it was cancelled again. The 7th Armour was meeting trouble down, you see, and couldn't progress. Unfortunately, I can't remember, to be honest, I can't remember whether we did it the third night. But orders came that we had to move up north straight away. Evidently, after one or two I don't know what the word is, there had been no breakthrough on the first night of the attack, and Monty was doing one of his famous sort of, I don't know what his technical term was, crumbling attacks, attacking bits this way and that way, and pushing back a little bit further. But they were fighting like hell in the north, and he was obviously preparing for a final attack to come along, you know, within a day or two to get the gap open so he could get his armour through. And
you hadn't actually got into action yourself, you say, in the position you were in.
No.
You'd been called forward but hadn't gone in.
No.
Did that make it worse each evening?
I suppose it would, but I have no recollection of that. Like I can really recollect when I got hit. Like I can recollect when I got taken prisoner of war, which is fairly clear. But this was, I can't truthfully, you know, sort of say any more than simply because I had no idea what it was going to be like, even if we'd got through, you see.
As an officer, you must have many things on your mind when this is going on.
Yes.
Things you've got to check on, things you've got to do.
Yes.
This must help in the situation.
Oh, it does, yes. Yes, you've got to try and keep all that you've ever been taught in the front of your mind. And I can remember it was control. Now, how are you going to keep control? That was the thing that seemed to worry me. How do you keep control? Because I wasn't just looking out at myself, it's the other 30 men. And I realised, well, you can only do your best, you know. Certain limits, you're trained. A And of course, the Mondi, and this is why I respect, you know, have a regard for him, had built up this feeling of, you're right to attack them. It's right to attack them now. You'll never have a better chance. But anyway, after two nights of this, or three nights, we were told to move north. We pulled back a little bit and moved up right up to the north, virtually to the sea, where I think we had a bath in the water at one stage.
And this was by truck, was it?
By truck, oh yes.
Was this to be a brigade attack or just a battalion?
Well, it to start off with, as you could imagine, Harry, we were going up north to reinforce an attack. Now, what strength we were going to attack in, at that stage, we had no idea. We hadn't been briefed for it. So up we went, got to the coast, moved up by steps to the Alamein station, and then got to a point where we said goodbye to our trucks and put our kit on and start marching forward. And it was round about that time, before we start marching forward, we were briefed by the battalion commander, all officers, his broad plan, and we found out that this was to be the attack codenamed Supercharge, which was the last big infantry attack before the end of the Battle of Alamein. It was to break through their last resistance up there, so that the sappers could make two paths through the minefield, because we had the 10th Armored Division in support or something, and in addition to our own divisional support tanks, to get them all through and tally-ho into the open spaces beyond. So we were briefed, as I say, and the orders were, I can't honestly remember much more than what I've just told you, that was the object of the exercise. And I believe at that time he gave the scope of the attack, which was something like, it would be, in our case, the whole brigade would attack, with the 8th Army on our, the 8th Battalion, sorry, DLI, on our right flank, the 9th on the left of the 8th, and the 6th were in reserve, going to be in reserve behind the 8th, to sort of watch that right flank, where we might face a sort of a counterattack or something strengthened. On the right flank of the 8th, there was a New Zealand battalion, or a battalion from the New Zealand division, the Maori battalion. They had objectives to capture on our right flank, which was additional protection for us, really. On our left flank, we had a brigade of the 51st Highland Division. I think they were Seaforth Islanders. And that was the sort of broad picture. Then there was the mention of the support, where we had the Chechens firing their machine guns, and the artillery barrage was going to be the, you know, stagger the world by its number of guns and that. And we were going to attack on a timed barrage. And the idea was, when the artillery fired, they were going to fire, I believe it was 1,000 or 2,000 yards ahead of us, and then it was time that we moved up to that point, and from there on, we had to keep as close in onto the behind the barrage as we could as it crept forward, and there was all sorts of signals to have our direction, like the Beaufort's gun would be firing tracer to show the limits of our flanks, and when the barrage was going to lift from its opening start line, blue smoke would be fired, and every little detail was thought of, and the rest was just the usual, the order of the platoons and well, I can't remember any other more detail in the order than I've just talked about. So the attack eventually was timed for the night of November 1st, 2nd. And
do you recall the move up?
Yes.
Through the various positions to where you're going?
Oh, it was not very clearly. Not very clear. Once we got out of the truck, we seemed to be marching a long way. And it was through mines as well, and we set mines off and lost a few, you know. And we had a lot of gear on, and it was dusty with the shelling and what have you. We were tired, and, you're always hungry. But I don't remember anything other than that it wasn't a really pleasant thing. We were conscious of this is the poor BI, you know. At least I was.
Do you recall the position of your platoon in the formation?
Well, on the march up, no. I think on the move forward, we had the 8th on, once we started moving forward, we had the 8th DLI on our right, and I was the right-hand platoon of our company, which sort of abutted onto the 8th Battalion. Not that we met, but I was there, and then there was there'd be another platoon of ours, of our company, B Company, and then I think it was C Company on the left again, and then we had A Company in reserve, I think it was.
So on your right-hand side, your right-hand man wasn't against the left-hand man of the 8th Battalion, they weren't?
Well, they weren't that close together, honestly. They weren't that close.
Were you delayed on the start line when you got to the start line? Was there a delay before you could move? Or?
Well, remember, the whole attack had been delayed 24 hours for some reason. So ignoring that for the moment, well, ignoring that, because we couldn't get into position quickly enough. Because, you know, it's not a clear forward sort of scenario like you have on a drawing board, you know, where you're playing with your soldiers. You've still got the remnants of Australian trucks, but manned Australian trucks. And although your start line is here, you've got the two New Zealanders in front of you, and they're wandering about. So there's those sort of hold up. And I remember I got a bit of a shock. Teddy came along, And he liked the fact that what I did when we got the start line, I paired the lads up and sort of keep yourself warm, you know, because we still had an hour or two to wait. And we ran about the time when we were having a hot meal. We'd had a hot meal before we'd marched up, and we were broaching in the coffee and rum. Anything to keep warm.
What were you clothed in?
Well, as far as I remember, it was KD. Still had our summer kit on.
And it would be a typical cold western desert night.
Very cold night. And that's why I said, cramp, get together in pairs. One of you can, if you can sleep, but take turns, you know. And I thought this was a good one. And Teddy came along, he said, like that. Well done. He says, now what do you think of the wire in front of you? Yeah. I said, well, what do you mean, what wire I've got in front of me? He says, well, I told you to go and see the bloody wire. Haven't you been? I said, well, of course not, because you didn't tell me. He says, well, get yourself off now and see. Because it was a single strand concertina wire across our front, which one of the Allies, Aussies or New Zealand, had run across, you know, during the preparation. And anyway, it was an obstacle we had to cross. And obviously, Teddy wanted to be sure that we knew what we were going to do. So I walked off with me Batman. And found the wire. It was about 200 yards ahead of where we had formed up. So now, what did I do? You know, what would any sensible bloke do? Because the chances of, by the time I'd walked back and got my formed up on my platoon and gone forward again, the chances of coming to, if I'd cut a gap in it, of hitting the point where I cut a gap, almost totally remote. Anyway, what I did, I snipped the wire, but I didn't pull it apart, just snipped it, and at 30 yards along, I snipped it again. So that if I didn't hit the right place, there was no additional obstacle for some of the sod to. Because I pulled the wire out of the way, you know. But if I was lucky and hit it, it would just pull it round. So I thought that was it, and went back. We went, and as I say, this was the time when the two runners and the anti-tank riflemen, they carried on their backpacks canteens, thermos canteens, each containing about a gallonish of hot cocoa, in which the rum had been. So, sort of on your feet, lads, this is the moment you've waited for. And of course, they were all so young that the rum didn't mean a great deal to them, especially at that stage. And I really showed off by showing that I drink rum. I must have drank a gallon of this stuff. I've never drank rum since. It was so, oh dear me. Anyway, we had our rum. We stood up, and it was about 5 minutes to go, you know, and we fixed bayonets in the approved style, and then all of a sudden, all hell was let loose, you know, the sound was horrendous.
To being relatively quiet to that point.
Very, very quiet, you see.
Are men who literally know that they're minutes off this great danger, are they talkative? Are they quiet?
Mostly very quiet, I think. Well, mostly very quiet, full stop. But there's always the chirpy one says something, you know, makes you laugh. Not that I can think of much to laugh at. No, it's a time of thought and reflection, and you know, even if you are still counting, I wish we'd carried 100 rounds of ammo instead of just 50, you know, and what happens if, the sort of thing. And I would put it down that the boys were in good heart, you know, there's nobody wanting to go and see his mother or anything like that. And then this tremendous opening up of the barrage again, you see me. When we all turned around to, you know, to look behind us to see, you could see the guns flashing, you know. God, along the line and the guns screaming over. Continuous barrage. You really think that there'll be nobody left alive. And then Teddy had his hunting horn, the big thing, the secret weapon. And what with the Maoris screaming on the right, and Teddy blowing his horn in front of us, and the guns, and the bagpipes squirreling from the C4 pounders, it was a, which is a good thing. It keeps your mind off other things. And on we went, and suddenly I bumped into Teddy. And he said, "I've lost the bloody hunting horn, you see." So we took 10 minutes off, I think, to be perfectly truthful, looking for Teddy's hunting horn. But we found it for him, or at least, I don't know that we found it, but it was discovered.
Were you advancing through mines? When you met the German positions, of course.
When we got, the Germans were about 2,000 yards away from our start line, and from other, before then there'd be odd mines about, you know, there's mines all over the place, but when we hit the 2,000 yards point where the Germans were and where we'd been, our artillery had been dwelling on it, you're in the minefield. And
was the plan that you would just walk through it?
Yes.
There was no engineers to...
No. The engineers were behind us.
Did you know whether there were anti-personnel mines or tank mines?
No, but the guess was it would be both. The guess was that they would be both. It would depend on... Obviously, anti-tank was, for them, the most important to...
Are you aware at that point where you're putting your feet?
Not really. You just put your feet to take you forward. You're not, in other words, prancing in just in case. It's the only way you can really do an attack, because to cover the frontage of a two brigades, as we were, at nearly a divisional front, at the same time as you, whichever way you tackle it, you're going to have to do something special, like we did at Marath, to tell you about, you know, later on. But no, you've just got to accept that there are mines there, some of them may be anti-personnel, but... you know, it's if you've got that and bullets coming towards you, I know anti-personnel mines sound terrible, but there's nothing more terrible than a machine gun stuttering across your front, you see. It's just nicer if they weren't there. But then following us very closely behind were this... sappers going forward with the mining, anti-mining gear, and digging the mines out. You know, it's a job like that. perish the thought, hate to do. And they were clearing the gap, which had our tanks at this stage, the early stage, as close as, you know, 15 to 20 minutes behind us, coming through a gap.